A man had a dream. The dreamer was Luke Stoughton. The dream was of founding a town.
Many men have dreams, but often they are planted in mists of fantasy and fall short of realization. This dream, though, was different. It was firmly rooted in man's need for opportunity, for elbow room. This dream was unusual because it came true. The dream of founding a town was based on deep, rich land. Land a man could farm without breaking his back and plow. Land which was cheap and easily had. Land bursting with elbow room and opportunity. Wisconsin land. We said that Stoughton's dream came true. For proof, we offer these sounds captured by our tape recorder. This is the sound of a Stoughton playground at recess. This is the sound of Stoughton men at work in Stoughton industry. This is the sound of a Stoughton farmer milking his cows. And this is the sound of transportation connecting Stoughton with her markets. These are vital sounds in Stoughton 1950. These then are some of the results of Luke Stoughton's dream.
The Wisconsin College of the Air presents Wisconsin Communities, a new series of documentary programs. Wisconsin Communities profile sketches of the Badger State. Here now is your producer-narrator, Carl Schmidt.
How does a town spring up? Why do people stop there? Why do they stay? What are the essential ingredients of a community? What makes it tick? These are the questions we'll be asking about Wisconsin communities. The answers are not obvious. They're often composed of intangibles, difficult to find and still more difficult to express. Answers sometimes found in such things as luck, ignorance, fortitude, or the weather. And so we ask you to watch with us as we tell these stories. Watch for the answers to our questions. Why did people settle here, and why do they stay? What makes the town tick? 18 miles south of Madison on U.S. Highway 51, the road slopes down to the Yahara River and winds through Main Street, Stoughton, Wisconsin. We searched for answers to our questions in this community of 5,000 people. We looked around for some of the old-timers. The first settlers, of course, are gone. People like Luke Stoughton, who founded the town on land once owned by Daniel Webster. Or the wheat farmers who first tilled the soil. After all, that was a century ago. But we did find a man deep with the wisdom of a rich life. A life of observation, study, and appreciation of the things around him. In the year 1900, a Norwegian settler fathered a son, Ferd Hummy by name. And he endowed that son with many stories of pioneer days. Ferd has woven these and other stories into a history of Stoughton. He talked with us in the power plant where he works. In the background, you'll hear the hum of 60,000 volts of electricity. Here now is Ferd, and he's answering the question, why did people settle in Stoughton?
Well, I suppose the primary reason that the settlement occurred right here is because of the river. Luke Stoughton, who lived in Janesville back in the early 40s, and noticed that this place would make a good place for a mill. A good mill site. So he bought the entire plot of land from Daniel Webster. I'll back up on that. He didn't buy it from Daniel Webster, but Daniel Webster at one time owned it and either didn't make the payments or couldn't or something like that. And Stoughton bought it from the state or territory of Wisconsin. His first move was to build a dam and a flour mill. Most of the settlers were from the east, were interested in raising wheat. That's what they hoped to do. So you can see the importance of a mill. Of course, where a mill exists, it becomes a good place for a blacksmith to establish, a little hotel to take care of the farmers who in those days had to come in with their grain by ox team and of course couldn't get very far in one day. Everything was built right around that mill.
They came from Norway, these immigrants. They came here in search of a promised land, a land of wealth and perpetual plenty. What they found was often brutally disillusioning. Here's Ferd with an example.
My dad tells, for instance, when he came here with that idea, he and the son of a minister in Norway, and the ministers in Norway were the tops of the social class. They had power, prestige, wealth, and everything else. So that this lad could have stayed in Norway and had everything he wanted. But he came here to pick up some of this easygoing money. They landed in Stoughton and walked about 7 miles out into the country asking different farmers for jobs and finally got a job planting tobacco in the spring of the year. No tobacco planters. You simply walked along with a basket of plants and a pail full of water, stooped over, poked a hole in the ground, put some water in, put the plant in. One more step and you stooped again. And after doing that from dawn until dark, this poor lad who had never done a day's work in his life, he was so tired he couldn't even eat. He just threw himself on the bed and wept. He says, this is what I came to pick my money off the trees, and I've worked like a fool since dawn, and I've earned 50 cents. So he went back to Norway, but my dad didn't have money enough, so he had to stay.
Ferd's dad was 28 years old at that time. He lived to be 96. One man among thousands who thronged a new country in the new world. They settled it with a spirit called American, a spirit transplanted from other shores. Here it grew and thrived and won the name American, being nourished here. Today, 3 out of every 4 people in Stoughton are of Norwegian descent, and the shores of the old country are still remembered. Old songs and legends, old ways of doing things. People can store them away, alter them, bring them out only on Sundays, but discard them, never. At Stoughton, for instance, Norwegians still prepare dinners of lutefisk and lefse. We talked with Mrs. Lita Spurley, a Stoughton woman renowned for her experience with this Norwegian dish. Here is Mrs. Spurley answering our question, can you tell us something about lutefisk?
Years ago, they always used to call it the dried fish tusk. It's a Norwegian name. Now, I think they make it mostly from codfish, as I understand it. And years ago, of course, the mothers were quite busy about a month before Thanksgiving to buy this dry tusk, or lutefisk, as they called it. And they would, before that time, they would start to save their wood ashes. And because that they contain lye, and then they would pour water on those ashes to kind of make a brine out of them, and then pour them on the dried lutefisk. And as I remember, they used to soak it in that lye mixture or wood ashes mixture for about 3 weeks. Then they would start to the process of taking that lye out of there after the fish had loosened from its bones and things like that. Then they would, they used to call it watering, that's what they did, water it out. And that would be for 3-4 days that they would keep on watering. And then they would, in the meantime, they would be starting other batches. So, as I remember it, there was lutefisk practically all winter long for the table. And for the church suppers, the various mothers and families would start this process of getting the fish ready for the suppers.
Lutefisk goes with lefse like bread with butter, like bacon with eggs. Here's Mrs. Spurley with a description of lefse and the way it's eaten with lutefisk.
Well, lefse is a sort of a, it's made with flour and milk and shortening. A lot of people use potatoes with it. And it's quite a trick in making it so that it's pliable and won't get hard. And they usually use that with your lutefisk. Fill the lutefisk, the lefse full of lutefisk and melted butter, roll it up and eat it without any idea as to how you look when you're eating it.
Like to try some? Sounds pretty good, doesn't it? Lutefisk in Stoughton today is a tie with the historic past. It's often used as the reason to gather socially, as at supper in the church basement. Lutefisk is also the basis of a wholesale food concern and the basis of a unique high school cheer. In Stoughton, you'll find an instrument called the Salmodicon, one of the few in the country. Hollow box, single string, played by stroking the string with a bow. It's a crude affair once used by Norwegian choirs to set pitch. Once there were 4 Salmodicon players in Stoughton, but death and old age have reduced the number to 2. We've recorded a Norwegian folk song for you, as played on the Salmodicon. The 2 Salmodicons lie flat upon a table, players facing each other. A Mr. Felon built these instruments. He's now dead. But his wife, Mrs. Felland, has kept on teaching the art. A Norwegian folk song played upon the Norwegian Salmodicon.
You know that instrument was familiar to Stoughton in the days of wheat farming, the 1870s or thereabouts. Nowadays, wheat farming, like the Salmodicon, is largely a thing of the past. Wheat was the big thing for Stoughton farmers and townsmen back then. The Stoughton mill was fed by wheat. The crop was a natural for the Norsemen. The seed was easy to grow. Farms were small. Crops were large. Ferd Hummey says that Stoughton was like a bit of Norway where farms are always small. But that's part of his story as he set it down in Oak Opening, Ferd's history of the community. Here he is.
We had little spots of prairie in between the groves of oak trees that would lend itself to the farmer who wanted to build a log cabin and plant a little wheat by hand, harvest it by hand with a scythe and a cradle, thrash it out by very primitive methods, flail, or having even the oxen walk around, stomp the grains out of the straw. Even some of them went to quite a bit of labor to get the chaff out of the grain. With no thrashing machine, they'd climb up in a tree with a sack of wheat and have their women folks and children down below holding a blanket on a day with a little breeze, and then he'd pour the wheat out of that sack and the wind would blow the chaff away and they'd catch the grain.
But the wheat years were limited.
Chinch bugs invaded the fields with ravenous appetites. They destroyed the tender stalks. Meanwhile, the yield began to plunge downward as many harvests took the life out of the soil. Wheat farming was doomed. And so farmers turned to tobacco. Acre upon acre of green leaves rose up, were cultivated, cut down, stripped and stemmed, and then replaced by more rows of green leaves. Acre upon acre.
There was more tobacco raised in Dane County, I believe, than anywhere else in the world at one time. And Stoughton was right in the heart of that.
We talked with a man who has been a buyer of tobacco around Stoughton all his life, Andrew Birkeland.
I started in a warehouse in 1897 for John Holston down here in the little shack. 13 years old. We had to make our living then. We couldn't go to school. But 9 months school in my life. That's all. Go to school when you have nothing else to do. Everybody.
There was a time within Andy's memory when small cigar factories employing 2 or 3 men each made and marketed their product in the surrounding area. By 1920, the last of these were gone, and Stoughton today is primarily a warehouse location. We talked with Andy in the King Edward Cigar Warehouse, where he was sorting bundles of tobacco from the 49 crop. He's been in tobacco for 53 years, and in that time, he's seen a lot of tobacco. We asked Andrew Birkeland about the tobacco picture today as compared with 50 years ago.
I don't think they raise over 25, 30 million pounds in the whole state.
In the whole state.
Mm-hmm. They used to raise 50 and 60. And it used to be crazy for them. They used to. But the chewing has tapered off. And cigarettes has taken their place. Cigars isn't selling so fast. Where they needed 3 million pounds of scrap, they seem to get along with about 500,000 now or 1 million. So they're not chewing so much. I think the younger generation has run into cigarettes. I remember 1910-11. Went out here, their country. One afternoon, we bought 8,000 bundles, Will McIntosh and I, good tobacco. And it's not unusual to find them from 6 to 1,000 bundles on a farm. Where it's got to be a big crop now at 200, isn't that right? In all the tobacco business, tobacco is going down. Seems so the tobacco is getting poorer every year, harder to raise it. The weather condition, the elements or something.
You think it could be the soil, the effect on tobacco?
Soil has something to do with it. There's something wrong. Wore out, probably.
The soil is worn out, probably. Tobacco wears on the soil like wheat wears on the soil. Farmers found that out. Often they solved the problem by moving to other farms. As Ferd Hummey puts it,
some of the farmers who made good money at it would even brag that they'd ruined 3 farms.
There's a rather bitter adage which one hears now and then. It goes like this. The father says, "Well, son, here's the farm. It's yours now." And the son says, "Thanks for the farm, Dad, but where's the land?" The law of conservation had to be learned, and learned the hard way. In the 1920s, when the tobacco crops failed, the law was a theory no more. It was a fact. You've got to protect the soil to protect yourself. But how? By what means? There lay the problem. It defied farmers around Stoughton, around the state, and throughout the Midwest. How? How can a man restore the soil? Today, the answers born of necessity are old hat for most of us. Contour plowing. Rotate crops, apply fertilizers, and when in doubt, go to school, as farmers do these days. Stoughton today has a busy program of vocational agriculture. Mr. Schaefer, the teacher, is kept busy with 2 classes in the high school, plus an extensive schedule with adult farmers from the surrounding areas. The agricultural picture today is considerably brighter than it's been at any time in the last 30 years. One of the big reasons is the present practice of soil conservation. We asked Mr. Schaefer if he had any difficulty selling conservation. Here's his answer.
Not like it used to be. The resistance is withered away primarily by example. Farmers are doing strip cropping. They're putting in terraces where necessary, but mostly they're considered or are generally concerned about keeping the rough land seeded.
All of those things are hopeful indications that the farmers are awakening to the fact that not only tobacco and wheat, but human beings too are a product of the soil. They're all a crop, and we've got to take care of the soil if we're going to continue living.
Thanks, Ferd. You turn a mighty good phrase. This is the sound of busy industry in the Stoughton of today. It was not always so. There were times of boom and bust for Stoughton industry. That in itself is not unusual. Most industries and most communities have their ups and downs. But in Stoughton, the economic storm swept in suddenly. And in a matter of minutes, the devastation was complete. Herewith, the story of Stoughton industry. First came the wheat farmers, and there was business for a mill. Then followed more farmers and more wheat. Soon there was need of wagons for transport. A factory sprang up. The railroad came to town, broadening the factory's market possibilities. This factory was the only industry in town, the Mant Wagon Works. Time and hardship have erased that company, but some of the old-timers remember it with affection. We turn now to a gentleman who is three generations old. His name is Chris Neston. His accent, rich and distinctly Norwegian. Chris worked at the wagon works at the turn of the century.
Well, when I first started to work down in the shop there, that was in the spring of 1899. It was rather a slack time of the year. Well, I was a stranger there. I didn't know anybody around the shop. But I found it to be a very friendly place. Everybody was friendly. They saw that new man coming, and everybody friendly. Ask where are you from, and so forth and so on. And of course, everybody was very much interested if I intend to stay or be a wagon maker, and so forth and so on. But I found it a very friendly group of men, and they were helpful in every way. Our wages was very small, but the cost of living was according.
Yes. The cost of living was according. Want to compare it with your cost of living in the atomic age? After listening to Chris, you get hungry for the old days. Problems were simpler then, the pace of living slower, the likelihood of seeing your children grow up more probable. But what happens? What happens when the only industry in town folds up? Get that. The only industry in town folds up. Is there anything short of catastrophic in that? Do you call that a simple problem? We're moving to the outskirts of Stoughton again, and we're talking with Ferd Hummey.
One time, there were two wagon factories here. One of them had a monthly payroll of $90,000. The other one had a payroll of $50,000 a month. That meant $140,000 a month coming into a small town. And all of a sudden, that stops. Ghost towns have resulted from much lesser calamities than that.
And there it was, the death of industry in Stoughton. Men out of jobs. The year was 1922. It was a fateful year, a doubly fateful year, because Stoughton farmers were in trouble too. Their tobacco lands were giving out, and now the wagon works. It was suddenly discovered that the market for wagons was largely gone. A man by the name of Henry Ford had quite a bit to do with that. The wagon works had made the difference between a little mill center and a thriving industrial area, nourishing the families of many Norwegian immigrants.
The population of Stoughton was justified only in terms of the jobs available at the wagon works. And now those jobs were gone. Something had to be done. For some, the only answer was to move elsewhere in search of work. For others, who could stick it out a little longer, the storm finally subsided and the sun broke through. Here's Ferd with the rest of the story.
The city bought the land and buildings, largely, that these two factories were using, and went to infinite labor to try to encourage other manufacturers to come here and start up. Offered them free buildings, free taxes and everything else to try to encourage them. But we had some success. That's what brought such concerns as the highway trailer here and some of the other factories that helped carry us along through that period. And of course, when this last war started with its attending boom, Stoughton prospered like all other towns, and that is what put us on our feet again.
And what does it sound like to bounce back? Listen a moment. That's how it sounds. Punch press and lathe spinning out the products of industry. The same industrial might that bounced back during the war years. Bounced back because it had an investment to protect. The lives of Stoughton men. The job was well done. Awards for merit will tell you that. It was a personal job for Stoughton. The home front here was never very far from the fighting front. We know that. We took a walk down Main Street. At the corner of Main and Fifth, we stopped. There before us was a white panel, gray with the names of the war dead. Stoughton's investment in World War II. We were not surprised at the number. We'd expected to find a long roster. Part of the backbone of the 32nd Division came from here. The division who left so many of its number on the black beaches of Pacific Islands. And so, the wheels of industry are turning once more in Stoughton. Did the experience of the 20s teach Stoughton anything? In search of an answer, we visited a factory. We chose one that bridges past and present, the Stoughton Cabin Body Company. Here's a company that makes wagon tops, only they're modern wagons, and you can put six men in the truck driver's cab. Head of the company is Bob Peterson. He took us into his office, and there, behind his desk, we saw pictures of his product, cabs, all sizes, already fitted on trucks. First off, we asked Bob about his company and how it started. The next voice is that of Mr. Peterson as he talks with us.
Stoughton Cabin Body Company was organized as it is at present in 1937. But it really is the inheritor of the Stoughton wagon companies of the past. That is, the traditions and skills of the workmen have been carried over into the manufacture of cabs and truck bodies.
I see. Could you tell us a little bit more in detail about your product, about what you're making here?
We make all sorts of truck bodies or van bodies. Also special cabs, such as large crew cabs, 5, 6, 7, 9-man capacity, as well as sleeper cabs. Then, too, we have made cargo bodies and special cabs for the Arctic region for the government.
Did you find that some of the skills that were employed in the old wagon works carrying over, some of those skills being useful in the
Definitely. There were men there who were skilled in woodwork. That still is used to some extent, especially in van bodies. Mm-hmm. Then, too, there were men who were skilled in metalwork, and that is used a great deal in present construction.
As for the industrial outlook in Stoughton, well, here we are asking that question.
What is, in your opinion, the industrial outlook in Stoughton? Would you say it's good
I think the industrial outlook is better than it has been in the past for several reasons. There is a definite move toward the spreading of industries out through the country, away from the centralized areas. Then, too, there is a diversification of industry here today, whereas in the past, Stoughton was pretty much a one-industry place. And under those conditions, the people were at the mercy of the success or failure of one industry.
And what of the principal industries in town? Can you give us a brief rundown on those? Mr. Peterson again.
Yes. Today we have our little company, which employs 50 men. We have the highway trailer plant, which employs sometimes as many as 350. Perhaps the average is a little less than that. The armor plant, from 50 to 75 men. The mill print plant, about the same number. The canning company. The various tobacco companies. The garment factories. All of them employ a number of people.
With the number of industries in town working roughly full-time, there are enough industries to employ the people now in Stoughton, is that right?
Yes, when they are operating normally.
Various industries of several types. Diversification of industry. There's a big lesson that Stoughton has learned from the collapse of its one and only industry back in the 20s. This diversification, these industries mean jobs and security to Stoughton workers. These industries mean 500 jobs to Stoughton. That's employment enough for every man in the labor supply. But time is short, and we move now into the shop at the Stoughton Cabin Body Company.
We're in the sheet metal shop of the Stoughton Cabin Body Company now. You can tell from the background that the place is bustling with activity. Mr. Peterson standing beside me here. I wonder if you could give us an idea of some of the operations that are going on around us here now.
Well, the grinding noise you hear in the background is a buffer, which is a sheet of paper with sandpaper on it, grinding off the rough parts of steel. The steel is being spot welded, where you hear the clicking noise, spot welded together to form an Arctic cab closure, a closure to put on Army trucks to keep men from freezing up in the Arctic zone.
I notice over here on our left some stamped out parts. Are those the doors or the cab roofs or something like that?
Yes, you're right. They are the cab roofs, not the doors.
Are those made here or are they stamped out elsewhere?
They're made here. In our own shop, we make the patterns from which the dies are cast to the neighboring foundry. Then we machine them so that we do practically all of our own tool and die work.
Practically the whole operation is done here, then?
Yes, we form all of the steel.
Industrial Stoughton, 100 years of pioneering. First a mill site, then a wagon center, now a city of industries, old and new. Bob Peterson has told us that the industrial outlook for Stoughton is bright. But what about the farmers? What's happened to them since the bitter lesson of the 20s? Back then, tobacco was king in terms of cash and acreage. Here's Mr. Schaefer, the vocational agriculture teacher, talking about the change in crops.
Well, as far as the community is concerned around Stoughton, the change has been very dramatic. There is very little wheat grown, and it's only grown for a feed product to be used on the farm. But tobacco, probably back in the 20s, the number of acres was much greater than is grown at the present time.
Tobacco is still the top cash crop in the area and represents a large percentage of the total number of acres under cultivation. The biggest crops now, though, are legumes for hay and pasture, and then corn, grain, peas, and sweet corn. With improved conservation practices and the increasing awareness of the importance of agricultural welfare, we can report that the farmer's outlook is bright also. How does a community grow up? Why do folks unpack and settle by a river? Is it that a river means power, and power spins a wheel and creates a job? Partly that. But what is it keeps a man,
holds him when crisis and calamity cascade upon a town. Stoughton has known such times, yet the people pull themselves up by their bootstraps and see it through. Why? What does Stoughton offer these people? We tried to find the answer. Economic opportunity? Of course, that's vital. The opportunity for jobs, for financial security. But there are other reasons. Stoughton has a fine school system, famous throughout the state. Parents rely on it for the education of their children. They have faith in it, and they protect it with fierce pride. Mr. Olson, the superintendent of schools, had this to say.
The Stoughton schools have had the opportunity throughout a good many years of having a great deal of fine support from the community. Not only are they interested in the schools from a civic point of view, but they have always indicated a genuine willingness to provide the necessary financial support to operate a good school system. And I think that has been characteristic of the citizens of Stoughton through all these years, a genuine willingness to support their schools in a financial way as well as in a moral way.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. The quality of the Stoughton High School band reflects the pride of parents and students. High school students take a general course and elect studies of special interest to them. Nearly 30% of the young people go to college. You know that figure is way above average. Think of it. One out of every three students entering college. The fact speaks well for Stoughton teachers. After all, haven't they helped in the decision? The desire to learn does not come from books. Nor does a desire to think. It lies dormant within a person. A minor spark that must be kindled and fed by those around you.
Churches are the mark of a people's faith. There are many of them in Stoughton, nearly all Lutheran, and all of them built since the turn of the century. The newest church is the First Lutheran. 1,000 people worship here every Sunday. In the background, you can hear their choir in practice session. The anthem, Salvation is Created. Shall we sit in for a moment? A good place to raise a family. That's what a man wants and looks for. Good schools, a church of his faith, and a community that's friendly.
Good neighbors in Stoughton are as much a tradition as the festival of Norwegian independence. So it has been for more than a century. We can report, having visited Stoughton, that it has a friendly climate. But a far better reporter is Chris Neston. You met him earlier. His memories are mellow. And they suggest a man who's known many friends. We asked him if people really change. Do they seem happier for deluxe gadgets in a super age? Or were they just as happy in the days before? How about that, Chris?
I think that people are, as a general run, just as happy in their lot as they were 50 years ago. But it was a smaller group then. The city was smaller. everybody knew everybody else, you see. You could sit on the street corner and know everybody that went by. So the difference may be, of course, that we have more people. It's impossible to know everybody and to be friendly to everybody. But I think people are just as friendly, live just as happy now as they did.
Thanks, Chris. We doubt if Stoughton will ever be a ghost town, so long as men like you strengthen it and help it to endure. No town is a one-man affair. It's the sum of many energies, the strength of many men. Mill workers and wheat farmers, tobacco merchants and warehouse men, they fostered Stoughton. Their sons and their grandsons now sustain it. Today, Stoughton's industrial and agricultural vigor is greater than ever before, a sign of a healthy present and a hopeful future. There is, of course, more to the Stoughton story than we've been able to tell. There is in this town a heritage of courageous living, a heritage of happy, full living. There's the heritage of eccentric Judge Hans Hoverson, wearing a ragged straw hat summer and winter, but confounding the Madison lawyer who mistook him for a yokel. There's the heritage of Dr. Iverson, performing a successful operation for cataract in 1906, when few surgeons in the whole country would have dared the job. There's Hans Fickerud, drawing weird, plaintive harmony from his 8-string fiddle. There's Mike Mant and his 2 sons who could step on a scale and tip 1,000 pounds. There's Ole Helixson, high kicker extraordinary. Put a hat on a cane, hold it as high as possible, he'd kick it off. And there's the heritage of Gamla Bretta Svalheim, rowing a boat up the Yahara River to fish when she was over 100 years old. In 1836, a man had a dream. The dreamer was Luke Stoughton. The dream was of founding a town. The dream came true. The town was founded. People came to the town, came to work, to live, to raise families. This is Stoughton's dream come true.
Profile of Stoughton, Part 2 in the new College of the Air series, Wisconsin Communities. Script by Stanley Buckles and Carl Schmidt. Music by Patricia Hazard. The production was directed by Carl Schmidt. This is the Wisconsin College of the Air.